And we have an injured Ticat. Uh-oh, Andy Fantuz is down. And they hand it off inside. Gable spins off first contact. CJ Gable to the goal line, touchdown. There's John White, and he dropped the football. And a pile up there, and the Ticats say they've got it. And it is Hamilton football. The Ticats need a touchdown. Under pressure, throws, touchdown. It's caught by Terrence Tolliver. And the Ticats get right back in it. In trouble here, won't get the pass off. Gotcha. Has another sack. His ninth in 10 games, his 14th on the year.
Welcome to Podski Weeby. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Hey, Mike, how you doing this week? How you doing on Halloween?
Oh, pretty good. Another disappointing loss. It sucks, but overall, doing pretty good.
Are you a Halloween guy?
I enjoy Halloween. I'm not going out. I'm not dressing up or anything like that. But our apartment is Halloweened out. And, I enjoy the holiday.
Okay. See, I was never much of a Halloween guy. I didn't really enjoy getting dressed up in costumes. Although this week at work on Friday, we had, pay $2. You can wear a costume to work. And then the $2 went to the children's charity that our company has. And I was able to dress up as a pirate. And it was actually pretty hilarious. It was a giant foam pirate hat that was massive. And I took a piece of cardboard and wrapped it around my leg and made like a fake peg leg. It was pretty fun.
Oh, that's offensive to pirates. But
Well, to hell with pirates. They deserve to be offended. They're the scourge of the sea.
Well, look at on Twitter now. All the pirates are going to come out of there.
Yes, probably. My costume, however, on Friday was not the only scary thing we had to deal with on Friday. Yeah, we're talking about another Ticats loss. I guess we just got to start with the two biggest stories to come out of this defeat at the hands of the Eskimos, where the Ticats lost 29-26, and it is injuries and another terrible botched call by the officials. I would like to start with injuries because they are significant. None of them are more significant than the one suffered by Andy Fantuz. Reports are that he is done for the year with a torn ACL, and I don't know about you, but my heart sank when I saw him down on the field. I felt sick to my stomach, and it was one of those things where I kind of immediately knew that it was probably some sort of CL tear, ACL, MCL. It was a knee injury. You could just tell by looking at him on the ground. It was devastating. Over the last 2 months, this team has now lost Luke Tasker, Chad Owens, and Andy Fantuz, their three best receivers. This setback, especially at the receiving position, is probably the most difficult to overcome because Fantuz is a Canadian. I can't really say anything more than this just sucks. This just sucks.
Yeah, it's one of those injuries again where there was no contact. He was just making a cut and his knee gave out on him. We were talking last week about how he's been healthy the whole year, and then, you know, he gets injured Friday night in the game against Edmonton. It's tough. He was having one of his best years of his career, you know, over 1,000 yards for the first time since 2007, I believe, when he was with the Riders. So it's just another huge loss to the receiving core. I don't remember a year where – I know we've had – been plagued with injuries over the years, but not so many injuries at one certain position. It's tough, man. I mean, Claros has no familiarity with anyone really anymore, except for maybe Tolliver. So Fantuz going down, it sucks for him, it sucks for the team, it sucks for the fans, and it's just very disappointing. I didn't know he was walking around, he had ice on his knee. I was thinking maybe it's not as bad, you know, maybe it's not a season-ending injury, but it turned out it was. So, yeah, we're going to miss him the last game of the season and going into the playoffs because he's the go-to guy when they need a first down, when it's second and seven, second and six, second and eight, you know, so... It's just really tough, and I feel sorry for him.
I feel really bad for him, too, because he's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. He's probably not even going to get a chance to play next year until late in the season. Because of this, he's got to rehab this injury. Who knows what his future holds? He's 33. He's going to be 33 going into next season. He was having a career year almost, with the exception of that 2010 season where he was the most outstanding Canadian, led the league in receiving, and was just dynamite. This was his best season in the CFL, aside from that, and to just see it end in such a just a sad fashion. I just feel for this guy. I really do. I was so happy. We've talked about this before. I know it. When he came here in 2012, it was like, holy smokes, we got the guy, the best Canadian receiver of his generation. And I wanted to see him succeed this year. He did. And then he gets hurt just at the tail end. And it's just, I don't even know like what to say almost. It's like I said, it just sucks. And what the future holds for him in Hamilton or in the CFL in general, I don't know. I hope that they come up with some way to bring him back and not necessarily do right by him, but keep him on the squad, let him rehab that injury, and let's see what he can do when he comes back from it. But his career is nearly over, and this is one of those things where a guy who's played as well as he had, and let's not make any mistakes, he's made a fair bit of money in his career being a Canadian receiver. Maybe it's one of those things where he's just not going to rehab, he's going to walk away. I don't know. I hope not. I hope he's a Ticat next year, even though he probably won't play a bunch. I just feel really bad for him as a person. It was kind of just devastating to see that on Friday.
Yeah, you had to figure that he had one more big contract left in him with the way that he was performing this season, and now not so much. So, yeah, I feel terrible for him, and I hope he's back too.
But his injury, however, was not the only one we saw. We saw two more defensive backs go down. Johnny Adams and Darius Brooks were both injured in this game. Brooks' injury was particularly scary as he laid on the turf for what seemed like an eternity before he was carted off and taken to a local hospital. Mm-hmm. Luckily, however, he was released that night, so that's good to hear. Adams went down earlier in the game, and from what I am hearing, it's expected he will miss significant time, seeing as the season is at best over in 4 weeks, and with the way this team has been ravaged by injury and the way they're playing, probably over in two. My guess is we won't see Adams in a Ticat uniform again this year. The secondary, we've talked about it all year, has had a difficult time finding consistency, and they've now lost two more players. Like, how much can one team really expect to overcome in a single season? The injuries to this team have been devastating, and yet we're still sitting here talking about a playoff team. I know that they've underachieved massively, but when you look at the list of guys, if you went on the website and looked at the list of guys that were on the 1 or 6 game injured list, these are not players that are being stashed. These are players that are legitimately injured. You could form one hell of a football team just by the guys that are hurt on this team. So, like, what can we really expect from these guys with all these injuries?
Yeah, you don't want to make it an excuse, but at some point you have to. I mean, they're held together it's just way too many injuries going on here. Their receiving core is decimated. The defensive backs there are more injuries there. And we've been trying to switch it around all season in the defensive backfield. And I think it's just not our year. I mean, I'll be cheering for them hardcore, and I hope that they pull something amazing off. But with all these guys going down, key players at key positions, it's going to be tough. It's going to be real tough going into the playoffs to win any amount of games. We might be one and done. I hope we're not, but it's going to be real tough.
So the other thing we have to talk about in this was the blown call. Now, I want to start off by saying that the call did not cost the Ticats the game. I don't want to hear any of that nonsense. Edmonton still would have got the ball. They likely would have still been able to run out the clock. But to me, the impact of the call is immaterial because this is another example of the refs screwing something up. And how many times this year have we seen the CFL come out in the hours or days after a game and release a statement about a botched call? And this one, to me, might be the worst of them all simply because I don't know what the heck they were thinking. I've heard the explanation was something along the lines of, because Bowman didn't reestablish position in the field of play, that it was therefore an illegal kick out of bounds, but he touched the ball. And if the case is that a player can jump up and swat the ball out of bounds and it's a penalty, why wouldn't every player who is near the side, like, you know, when a kickoff goes out of bounds, like near the sidelines, why wouldn't the player just jump and swat the ball out of bounds? Because then you get the ball at like the 45-yard line. Like, it just seems to me like it was a horribly, horribly botched call. Obviously, you saw the aftermath of it where Jeff Reinbold just exploded, which is probably going to get him fined, rightly so. But just, again, another week we're dealing with this. And I got to be honest with you, Mike, I'm kind of sick of it. I've been a fan of this league since the 1980s. I've been a season ticket holder since 2010 for the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And in all my years of watching the CFL, I have never been looking forward to an offseason more than I am this one. I just need a break from this league and from the game. And I'm going to stay here right now. Once the Tiger Cats are eliminated from the playoffs, which personally I think is going to be in the East semifinal, that's it. I'm done. I'm not watching any more games. I'm not watching the East final. Not watching the West final. I won't watch the Grey Cup. Something has to change with this league, with the officiating. And if we just continue to support it, or if I, this is how I feel, we continue to support this, they're not going to make any changes. So all I get when I watch these games now is frustration. And I have so many other things that I could do with my time rather than carve out around 13 to 14 hours a week to watch CFL games, which for three decades, I've loved to do. I just don't enjoy watching the games anymore. And this, to me, was the final straw. This was just every week we're dealing with botched calls and just garbage stuff that I don't enjoy the games anymore. So I'm going to take in these last two games as a Ticat season ticket holder. I'm going to be at Tim Hortons Field. I'm still going to be screwing my guts out. I will watch any road playoff game they play in because my enjoyment from these games will be coming from the people that I watch them with, which are the friends that I've been going to games with for 6 years now. And are the friends that we get together and watch playoff games together. It's not going to be because of the product in the field. So outside of the Ticat games, this week, I maybe watched about three quarters of the Ottawa Winnipeg game. And I spent most of that time playing with my nephew while the game was on in the background. And I found it much more enjoyable that I wasn't as invested in cutting myself off to the rest of the world because there was a football game on. So you, sir, for any non-Ticats games the rest of the way, you're going to have to be our correspondent because unless something changes in the next week or so, I won't be watching these games, man. I need a break. And for me, that break can't come soon enough. So, Mike, a lot of the pressure falls on you, sir.
How are they going to change the refs' skill level in 1 week? I mean, these are the refs we have. It's not like they're not trying. They tried that NFL and all that, you know, giving refs an opportunity to go down south and refs come up north. I mean, to me, the product on the field has been awesome this year. You know, the play on the field, not the refs. I mean, the refs have been bad to say the least, but I don't understand how they could improve on it so quickly. I mean, the refs are bad and there's not going to be any other way around it. I mean, how are they supposed to improve?
They're, that's it. They're not going to improve, but this has not been a problem for a single season. This has been a problem now for season upon season. And I've just reached the end of my rope with dealing with these horrendous, horrendous officiating errors. I do not get the same level of enjoyment out of this that I did even a couple of weeks ago. But for the longest time, it's just been chipping away and chipping away. And this, to me, you can't get a call right on an onside kick that clearly touches an opposing player before it goes out of bounds when we are in a league where we all know that any fumbled ball that's tapped out of bounds is possession to that. Like, if you can't get that right, I'm concerned that you can get anything right. And I'm just not enjoying what I'm seeing. Yeah, we've had some great games, but every week you see articles or we talk about officiating mistakes and I'm tired of it. I'm just tired of it. If we continue to support a product that is subpar with the officiating, the play on the field is not subpar. And I don't want to make anyone think that I am at all talking about the teams or the players. I think we've had some great entertaining football games, but I'm just so done with dealing with officiating mistakes. It's every week. It's something. And it started at the beginning of the year and it hasn't subsided at all. I don't know what it's going to take to change the game. Is it going to take a terrible call in the Grey Cup that costs the team a championship before they actually fix this? I don't know, but they need to do something. They need to figure out whether it's pour money into this, better train these officials. I don't know what the answer is, but I know I can't continue to sit down and watch what I'm watching because I just don't like it anymore.
I guess you're just going to have to stop watching the league because I don't think it's going to get any better.
Well, we'll wait and see. I, like I said,
you know, like if you're
There's two games left. I got two games left. I got tickets to two games. I'm going to go to them. I'm going to enjoy the people I'm with. I'm going to try to have a good time. We'll see. We'll see. I will always support the Ticats. I'm a Ticats fan. Yeah. I like the team. Yeah. I like going to games because I go with my friends. That's what I'm getting the enjoyment out of, and that's what I'm going to take from this, is that it's a communal meeting between friends, and we just use the game as sort of a meeting point. But if this continues, I don't want to ditch the league because I do enjoy football. I do enjoy Canadian football, and I think it deserves our support for the players on the field. But they have to make changes to the officiating. I need to see something substantial in the offseason that shows that the people in charge of this league, the teams, the owners, the league office, give a crap. Maybe I won't be back next year. I don't know.
See, it sucks when the hardcore fans are bailing on the league because, you know, we're not the NFL, we're not the NHL, we're the, you know, it's the smallest CFL. And if the hardcore fans start jumping off the bandwagon, then I don't know who's left. So I understand everyone's frustration out there with the refs, but I don't know. I guess everyone's just not going to be a CFL fan because I don't see it getting any better anytime soon. There's not like there's a huge pool of Canadian football refs out there. So, it's been a problem for a long time. But, it just hurts to see all these fans not renewing season tickets, not say they're not going to watch the Grey Cup, not going to watch this, not going to watch that. I guess I'm just kind of a CFL apologist. But it's not that I don't see the reffing. You know, the bad reffing week in and week out. And I agree. I want it to be better too. I just, I'm going to be watching no matter what.
Well, hey, and good for you. I'm not here to try to sway anyone's opinion. I'm not here getting on a soapbox saying what I'm doing or how I view things is correct. We're all individuals. We all make our own decisions and you do what you think is right. And I fully support that. And look, I ditched the NHL when they kept going on strike, and I haven't watched a full hockey game in probably over a decade. The NBA just recently won me back. I just finally really got back into watching Major League Baseball. And I, to be honest with you, I'm losing interest in the NFL as well. I sat down and watched games yesterday, and sure, the Sunday night game between the Cowboys and Eagles kept my attention, but for most of the time, I was bored. Maybe I'm falling out of love with football, which would kind of break my heart because it's been the sport that I've loved the longest and it's always been my favorite sport. But I don't know. The off the field stuff in the NFL has been just draining on me, and the CFL officiating has been draining on me. I don't know. Maybe all I need is for the Grey Cup to happen where we award the championship and then I get away from it for a little while. Cause you know, that time between the Grey Cup and kind of the start of the year is a little bit slow. Maybe I just need that. And then I'll come back around and who knows? I don't know, but I just feel like this season has taken a lot out of me in dealing with all the garbage that we've had to deal with, that it's kind of taken away from some of the great product we have seen on the field. And I don't want to become that cynical fan who hates everything. I want to be the guy that has, for the longest time, when people would talk about NFL versus CFL, I would say, let's not knock the NFL. Let's talk about what makes the CFL great. I want to be the positive fan. I don't want to be the negative fan. And this season has turned me into the negative fan. And I don't want to be that. I don't like being that. So I just needed a little bit of time away. Who knows? Maybe I go to this game on Friday or Saturday between the Owls and Ticats and it all goes away and I come back next week and talk about what an idiot I was. But as I sit here right now, I need time away. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, and it's been, you know, the piling on of the challenges this season and all that. And yes, they changed it halfway through, but there's still work to be done there. They can really improve the challenge system as well. I think that can be improved in an offseason. I don't think the reffing can. So listen, I think the reffing has been bad, obviously, for many years, but they have a tough job. I mean, they do. It's they need to make the right calls. I mean, that play, the illegal kickoff or legal kick out of bounds, it was so obvious that Bowman jumped up in the air and swatted out of bounds. I do not know what they were looking at. So I'm frustrated about that too, but I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know how they're supposed to improve it. But hopefully in the offseason we see something that is showing us that they're at least trying.
Well, and that's kind of all I need. I need them to show me that they recognize that there is a problem. And that even if they come out and say, we know there's a problem, we're trying to figure out a solution, we don't exactly know what it is now, I can accept that you're trying something. I just don't like the idea of, and we've seen it before, where, no, everything's fine. No, we're fine. No, nothing to look at here. I don't like, there's an issue here. And you know what? The league as a whole, I think there was kind of a negative air about this season, maybe all the way back to when Chris Jones left Edmonton to go to Saskatchewan. You had that. That led to the whole Jason Moss compensation thing. It just feels like they're, you know, BMO's not doing as well as we thought for the Argos. The Argos have sucked, which we all thought was going to be – that was the Grey Cup ticket fiasco. It just seems like everything about this year, off the field especially, has been super negative. And I want to go back to when we sat down and we talked about games and we enjoyed the game and it was just about the product on the field. There's been too much off the field stuff. And then you add the officiating nonsense to this and – yeah, I the more I think about it, the more we talk about it, you're kind of being my therapist here. Don't worry, I'll pay you once we're off the air. You can bill me for your hours. I don't know. I just the more I talk about it, the more like I still want to love this game. I still want to watch this game, but I just feel like at this point, me getting away from it and not focusing around it so much like I have over the last who knows how many years might be good for me. To kind of, you know how sometimes, you know, you go to work every day and then you get a week of vacation and you're like, I didn't need to go anywhere. I just need to get away from work for a week. I kind of feel like that's this. And I'm hoping that we'll get to some point in the new year where that sense of love and that sense of desire to consume this product entirely will come back.
Yeah. And I think that they've made a lot of improvements to the on-field product, the play, just taking out the refs and all that. I think that the, you know, no clutching or grabbing from the secondary has really opened up the game. I think we're seeing higher scores, more passing yards, all that good stuff. They just need to work on some other things in the off season and, you know, tweak some stuff. Hopefully next year there isn't so much negative off field stuff. I don't think there'll be a Grey Cup ticket controversy. I don't think they'll, you know, be, all that crap that we've dealt with this year. So maybe down the stretch, maybe there's some good playoff games and the refs don't mess up, you know, in the playoffs and in the Grey Cup, and there can be a bit of a positive spin on this season, but we'll have to wait and see.
You take out that refereeing blunder and we kind of had a fairly decent football game on our hands. It was a 3-point loss by the Ticats. And it came down to the very end after they had this furious comeback in the second half again. I thought the game started off great. The Ticats marched down the field on their opening drive and scored a touchdown. It was okay. Then the next drive, they go down, and they get a field goal. Okay, that's not bad. 10-0, that's cool. Then they missed a field goal, and then they fumbled. And that was pretty much all the offense did until they had those two touchdowns late in the fourth quarter. Why is it, Mike, that this offense cannot seem to string things together for a full game? Why? Now that we're in the final week of the season, are we still seeing these lulls that happen either at the beginning of the games or at the end of games or in the middle of games? At some point in the game, we always see the Ticats go into this funk. Why? How does this keep happening?
I don't know. You got to think that Kolaros is missing Tasker. I mean, yes, he obviously misses Chad Owens, but Tasker, they had that connection. They were that 1-2 punch that he – Tasker was a guy that he could always depend on to be there, to make the catch, to get that first down, and he's not there. He's working with a bunch of new receivers. It's just they're not meshing as a group right now. You know, yes, they had the good start, but then the second quarter they score 1 point. Third quarter they score 0 points. And then they come on strong in the fourth and kind of make it close, but, you know, this score didn't resemble what was going on in the game, in my opinion. I just think that they're missing guys. They're missing key components to this team, key components to the offense. And as much as they try to replace these guys, I don't think they can.
I think you're completely right. There is one guy, though, that is irreplaceable, that did have an amazing game, and that was CJ Gable. Dude was a beast. He didn't get a lot of carries in the run game, but that, I think, was because the team got down by so much that they were forced to abandon it early. But he made up for that by being the team's leading receiver. He had only 6 carries in the game, but he took those 6 carries for 55 yards. He was a major component on the opening score. I believe he scored the opening touchdown, if my memory serves me correctly. And he also caught 9 passes for 88 yards. So 143 yards from scrimmage from number 32. Not bad at all.
No, amazing. I mean, we've been saying it all year. Use Gable, use Gable. They use Gable, they still lose. So I don't know what to think. I mean, I'm glad that they're using him now down the stretch here. I think they finally got it into their heads that they have to utilize this guy because he has so much talent. We see it every time he, you know, gets an opportunity to show what he has. He shows that he's one of the best in the league, in my opinion. He was great catching the ball out of the backfield, but it just wasn't enough. The other receivers and Zach didn't have as great a game. They just couldn't pull it out. They just didn't have enough. So I hope that it continues because I think we're going to need him carrying the ball and catching the ball in the playoffs. So, you know, a great game from him.
I think a couple other players had a good game. I think Terrence Tolliver and Kevin Elliott both stepped up in the absence.
He's been great.
Elliott's looked fantastic in his first two games, right? Like, Tolliver had 7 catches for 71 yards and a touchdown. Elliott had 5 catches for 72 yards and a 2-point convert. I think these guys could work really well together. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I have been super impressed with Kevin Elliott since he's seen the field. This is, 175 or so yards and a score and a 2-point convert in his two games. That's not bad production from a guy you brought in just a month ago.
Yeah, and he can spin that ball, boy. I tell you what.
Oh, he sure can. Who I don't like out of this game, though, and I think you know where I'm going, that's the offensive line. They looked so good against Ottawa, so good. And they looked equally as bad against the Eskimos. They didn't allow a sack, but holy hell, was Zach Caleros running for his life or what? They made that change at offensive line. They moved Brandon Revenberg back to guard and inserted Terrence Campbell at right tackle. And in my opinion, I think that was a mistake. Campbell took 2 drive-killing holding penalties, and I think the unit as a whole was just not as effective as when Revenberg was at tackle and Diakowski was at guard. With the injury to Fantuz, though, silver lining, if you can call it that, with when one of your best players goes down, is that I think the Ticats will now have to reshuffle the ratio, and I think that could mean we see that 4 Canadian offensive line, because I think that unit that we saw against the Red Blacks is the team's best. So maybe the Fantuz injury allows the offensive line to get a little bit better. Maybe that helps out the quarterback and the run game and all other sorts of stuff. I don't know. But the offensive line and Terrence Campbell, to me in particular, were bad in this football game.
Yeah, even Fulton, from what I saw, didn't have a good game. You know, fell punt, and Odell Willis had a, you know, field day without getting any real stats. You know, no sacks or anything like that. But the pocket was just collapsing all game long. It's like, okay, Claros comes in. Now let's play like, you know, it pisses me off. Like, you got to protect this guy better. They play so well last week, like you said, when Mazzoli was in there. And, you know, I don't want Mazzoli to get hit or hurt or anything like that either. But when Zach's in there, he's just coming off an injury. Protect him better, please. Like, let's get it together here, guys.
Yeah, he was running for his life. And I'm hoping, let's see, we like you said, we saw Mazzoli with this offensive line a week before. If we get that 4 Canadian O-line, I want to see what Caleros does back there, because that'll, I think, give us a better indication of what this team has with the offensive line. If that works, then stick with it. Terrence Campbell, it's not like Terrence Campbell's a former all-star in this league or anything like that. He's a rookie. I know he's going to make mistakes, but at this point in the season where it's this game coming up, not so much, but after that it's do or die, you need to have your best players out there. And I think those 4 guys, Revenberg, Diakowski, Filer, Bombin, and then the American and Fulton, is the team's best 5 offensive linemen.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see who they line up there in this game coming up. Now, I don't know if that'll be the lineup going into the playoffs, but it'll be interesting to see if they have the 4 Canadians in there this week against Montreal.
Okay, so I've done a lot of talking. Are you ready to talk some defense, Mike? What do you got for me there?
Well, not a very good performance again. Now, they held Mike Riley in check for most of the game. He was only 18 to 31, 50% passing. Yes, he had 2 TDs, but, you know, not the greatest outing by him. But where I was really disappointed was the run defense. John White ran all over them all game long. 132 yards, you know, 8.8-yard average, which is outstanding for him, terrible for the defense. And Mike Riley ran, too. He had 6 carries for 27 yards. So we've seen a lot of this lately. The run defense hasn't been great, and that's always been a calling card of this Hamilton defense, is they stuff the run, and it's not happening right now. Just overall, you know, another ho-hum performance by the defense.
Can I bounce an idea off you? This is something I thought of at the game. There was a near pick 6 by Cassius Vaughn. The Ticats were up 10-0 at the time, and he made a great break on the ball. It hit him in the hands and hit the turf. On the very next play, Riley hits Darrell Walker for a touchdown. Yeah. I'm of the opinion that if Vaughn catches that pass, not only does he score, I think that essentially ends the game for the Eskimos. I think that would have been that momentum-turning big play that this team has been lacking most of the season. They would have gone up at least 16-0, probably 17-0 at the time, and I think we would have seen a much different football game. What do you think? Do you agree with me there? Do you think that dropped INT pick six by Vaughn would have been is kind of the turning point of this game, especially because the Eskimos score on the very next play?
Yeah, I think it would have been huge. Up 17-16-0, really switched the momentum, and we've been missing that this year. The big plays from the defense, the big plays from the special teams that help out the offense. You know, the offense doesn't have to score as many points if the defense and the special teams are scoring. So yeah, that would have been a huge play, and it might have turned this game around and ended in a victory for the Ticats.
Yeah, it didn't. I think you're right, though. I think they kind of held Mike Riley in check most. 239 yards passing for Mike Riley this year, that's got to be one of his lowest outputs of the season. None of their receivers went over 100 yards. Darius Bowman had 63. Darrell Walker had 79. Brandon Zylstra was the leading receiver on the team with 86. Like, I think they did a decent enough job, but it just seemed like that when the offense went into the lull, the defense couldn't make the play to bring them out of it. And I think that's what they needed. And like you said, I think that's what they've been missing almost all season. We haven't got that momentum turning play. And I do think that the Vaughn interception there, even if he doesn't score, if he gets it deep into Eskimos territory and it leads to some form of points, I think that would have been the difference maker in the game. And it was so early on that I think it would have completely changed the makeup of this game, because John White, like you said, gashed this team. They're not running a lot with John White if they're down three scores. They're tossing that ball. So I don't know. It just felt to me like afterwards, when I was thinking about the game, that was the play that could have changed the game. And once again, the Ticats just don't make a play.
Yeah, it would have made the Eskimos offense more one-dimensional. So, you know, the defense wouldn't be expecting a run, and the Eskimos probably wouldn't have ran as much. So it would have been a huge play, but it didn't happen. So...
Yeah, fart noise about how we can sum up this Ticats season, pretty much. Any other sort of defensive things that you want to talk about? Or are you ready to jump right into the special teams?
Let's jump into the special teams.
Brett Maher, like, I like the guy. We've been talking about him a lot this season. We praise him when he does well. We do the opposite when he doesn't. How do you miss a 28-yard field goal? That's just suck the wind out of everything. And like, how do you miss a 28-yard field goal?
It makes you scratch your head about, you know, he's been awesome for most of the season, but then he does something like this. And guess what? They lost by 3. So obviously it's not all on him, but those 3 points would have helped us tremendously. And for him to miss a short field goal like that just kills the team.
Yeah, it's been tough when you see the guy he replaced doing so well elsewhere. And knowing that he can do better, we've seen him make pressure kicks. We've seen him perform exceptionally well in games, and then we see games like this. And recently, he's kind of like, we were happy about him making that kick last week against Ottawa, but I think he's missed something like 6 of his last 14 kicks or something like that. He's hit a pretty big rough patch at the end here, and the last thing you want is guys hitting sort of a lull as we get into the playoffs, when all these teams are pretty even going into the playoffs, and it could come down to a field goal at the last second, like we saw last fall in the East semifinal. Justin Medlock goes out there and booms it, and I think we all knew when they tried him out that it was automatic, that was going through, we were winning that football game. Mm-hmm. If a similar thing occurs this year, I'm not entirely sure that Brett Maher is going to make that kick.
I'm not sure either. I just, you know, he's made so many good kicks this year, like a 58-yarder I think is his longest, and that's no small feat. We know he can kick the long field goal, but we just don't know. We just don't know if he's going to make every kick anymore. I was way more confident earlier in the season, but those numbers recently are in the dumps, and it makes me worry going into the playoffs.
All right. So because of this loss, coupled with the Ottawa victory a day later, the Ticats are now locked into second place. The Red Blacks will host the East final. That means the Ticats will host the East semifinal against either Winnipeg or Edmonton, if my understanding is correct. BC, I don't think, can dip lower than third in the West. And with a win, they would play – they would host – if BC wins this week, they host the West semifinal. I think an Edmonton victory and a Winnipeg loss gives Edmonton third and Winnipeg fourth. A Winnipeg win, regardless of what Edmonton does, sends Edmonton back here for the East semifinal. So that's where we stand right now. That's – yeah, that's pretty much the end of that game. I think we can move on to the – tiny bit of news that we actually have this week. I nothing out of the Ticats regarding anything really, but I was given my ballot for the player awards this week, and I filled it out in advance of the game on Friday. So take that into account. I just wanted to rhyme off who I picked here. If we can go award by award, kind of get what do you think? Do you agree? Would you pick someone else and have a little fun with it? So even though when we've been asked by fans to do these most outstanding player award nominees, we've dumped doing offensive linemen because it's so difficult, I still have to pick someone. I picked Ryan Bomben, and to be honest with you, my main reason for picking him is that he's the only offensive lineman that has started 17 games for this team this season. So given how decimated this team has been by injury, starting every game, that's a feat, and that's worthy of a nomination.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I think he's played well all season long, too, so... yeah, I'd have to agree with Bomben. He's just a rock, you know, on that offensive line. He, like you said, he's been healthy every game, and I think he's played well every game, too.
And he came oh so close to scoring a touchdown this week, man. on that play. When I saw the guy going down the seam, I was like, that's odd. He looks awfully big to be a receiver. And then I looked in the big screen, I was like, holy smokes, it's number 64. Oh, I see. That would have been one hell of a catch had he made it, though.
Oh, man, that would have been amazing. I mean, just a little too far for
him. Yeah. So most outstanding special teams player. This was tough. Honestly, this was really, really tough. I went with Brandon Banks simply because his four return touchdowns this season still leads the league in returns. So I know he's missed the last two games. It's going to be great to see him play this last week against the Alouettes in the playoffs. But yeah, I he was my guy at the beginning of the year, and he didn't really do any, no one else on the team did anything to sort of overtake him. And he didn't really do anything to not deserve the nomination. I don't think he's going to win the league award this year like he did last year, but he is my Ticats nominee for most outstanding special teams player.
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know, Maher, Banks. I'd probably give it to Maher if I had to pick, just because I think overall he's had a pretty darn good season, and Banks has had a good season, but it just hasn't been that, you know, superstar season that we've expected from Banks over the years.
So for most outstanding rookie, I went with Brandon Revenberg. Considering the fact that he is not only a rookie, he's a Canadian rookie and a first round pick who has started games for this team and who we are calling for to start at tackle, not guard, not center, tackle for this football team, I think says all you need to know about how good this kid has been this year. I think he's a slam dunk for this award for the Ticats, probably a unanimous selection. And I think he's honestly got a legit shot of winning the divisional award and being the East representative at the player awards during Grey Cup week.
Yeah, I totally agree with your pick. It's pretty much a no-brainer. I was not expecting him to start at all this season. He's been thrown into the fire, and he's done a pretty good job. So, yeah, I completely agree with that pick.
So next up is most outstanding defensive player, and I chose John Chick. I think he's been the very definition of outstanding. I think there's been a lot of good defensive players on this team. Simone Lawrence has had a really good season. Larry Dean is a guy that doesn't get enough publicity, and I think probably would have been my selection if not for Chick just balling out. He's got, what, 14 sacks on the season now. He has been awesome. We have been talking about how great he's been all year. To me, he is the slam dunk pick, at least as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, for sure. He's been amazing all year long. You know, in the first game of the season, you would have sworn that Simone Lawrence would have won the most outstanding defensive player. He had an amazing game against the Argos, but not that he hasn't had a good season, but it just kind of, you know, went downwards a little bit after that game. So he's been great, but John Chick has just been outstanding.
Yeah, Simone's been great. Chick's been greater. I think that's the best way to put it. My most outstanding Canadian and my most outstanding player are the same guy. I saved this for last. It's Andy Fantuz. Yeah, like I said, I voted for these before Friday's game. So even though knowing that he won't play the rest of the year, I still would have picked him. I think there was more competition for him at Most Outstanding Canadian. Ted Laurent, obviously. You could probably even make a case for Brandon Revenberg to be this team's Most Outstanding Canadian nominee. Ryan Bomben, too. There's been a few Canadians on this team that have stepped up and played well. But for me, Fantuz above and beyond. And Most Outstanding Player, usually we give this to a quarterback, honestly. If you look at most of the nominees, probably across the board, especially over in the West, you're going to see a ton of quarterbacks. But the Ticats haven't really had any consistency at quarterback. They're two starters. They've had two, and they mostly play. I think Claris has, what, 9 starts, and Mazzoli has 8. So they pretty much split their time at behind center. So you have to look elsewhere. I look with Fantuz, and I still think, even though he's going to miss the remainder of the season, I still think he has a legitimate shot to be both the Most Outstanding Canadian nominee for the East and the Most Outstanding Player nominee for the East. I think he's just been that good in the 16 games he did play.
Well, I go for Fantuz as Most Outstanding Canadian, but I'd probably have to pick Chick for Most Outstanding Player. I think he's just been above and beyond, beat our expectations of what you thought that he's at an advanced age for a football player, but he looks like a young, you know, a 25, 26-year-old out there, and he's produced all year long. So is Fantuz, but if I had a pick, I'd probably go with Chick.
Well, you have to make two picks. You have to make a primary pick and a secondary pick in case there's a tie. Chick was my number two pick. So if not for Fantuz, I would have taken Chick. And it was tough at the end there, trying to decide who to pick. But I think ultimately, kind of, not just for how good he's been this year, but as kind of a, and I know you're not supposed to do this, but it's kind of like a career award sort of thing with how good he's been throughout his career. I think it would be kind of cool if Andy Fantuz had on his resume that he was the East Division Most Outstanding Player at some point. Not to say that he doesn't deserve it for what he's done this year, but I don't know. I think it's kind of a longevity thing and a career award. I think it would have been kind of neat that he got that. We're going to have to wait and see if he does. Who knows now, especially with the injury. But, yeah, I can't really argue with Chick. Like I said, it was tough deciding who to put where, and I guess ultimately settled on Fantuz.
Yeah, fair enough.
So we got a little bit of CFL news to talk about, and the first story is one I never thought we'd talk about. Paul McCallum is coming out of retirement to sign with the BC Lions. BC desperately needs help in the kicking game, especially on field goals. Richie Leone, who, as we talked about before we recorded the show, Mike and I do a little discussion, has been a wonderful punter, has a booming leg. He has been pretty much the worst kicker in the league when it comes to field goals. He's 35 for 51, which is a 68.6% completion average on kicks. Went 0 for 2 against the Riders on Saturday. I think it should be a surprise to no one that the Lions went out and found a kicker. I think it might surprise someone that they grabbed old man Paul McCallum. But it's kind of cool to see the old guy come back to play one last little stretch here.
Yeah, it's very – like when you – I hadn't heard about it before you told me, and I was pretty shocked. But, yeah, bring him back. You know, we were talking – like you just said, we were talking about Leone before the – we started the podcast, and I think that this guy has an NFL leg. He's a booming punter. If he could get the accuracy on the field goals, I think he'd be an NFL field goal kicker. But it's an interesting move. I don't know, you know, how much confidence they would have in Paul McCallum when he's coming out for like a 45 or 50 yard field goal. Does he still have that leg? I know in his last year that we saw him play, he didn't really have the, you know, that powerful leg anymore. So I don't know how that gets better as he gets older, but maybe if like they have to kick a 55 yarder to win the game, they bring in Leone, because I'm not sure that McCallum can hit from that distance anymore.
No, I agree with you. He was pretty much a 45 and in guy his last couple of years there, and I think they had someone who would come in, or they just wouldn't boot longer field goals, period. They would just, if it was going to be a 55 yard field goal and it was like 3rd and 3, they either go for it or they punt. But I think that with Leone, we have seen him boom some deep, deep kicks. His problem is just accuracy. It's consistency. And the one thing you'll get out of Paul McCallum from pretty much 45 yards and in is he's probably going to hit more than he's going to miss. Way more. He's probably like for every, you know, 100 kicks he's going to have, he's probably going to miss one inside that distance. So I think they're just looking for a scenario where, think about it, they get into the playoffs and they're in a tight game, which happens in the playoffs all the time. Do you really want to go out there with Richie Leone kicking a 44-yard field goal when he's been hitting at less than 70% on the season? That's not something Wally's going to want to do. So I understand they bring in a guy who they know he's only been retired for, like, he played last season, so it's not like he's been out of the game for a decade or anything. But yeah, I just thought it was kind of interesting that out of all the possible people they could have pulled, and there were other kickers out there. Swayze Waters is still sitting on the free agent block after being cut by the Panthers. So there were guys out there that we've seen perform well that didn't get a call. But I guess McCallum's local, probably comes in pretty cheap, and they will just have to dust off the old jersey and get the mothballs out of it and throw it back on him.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing him out there, actually.
Yeah, it's always kind of neat to see some of the old guys play. You know what? Like, he now replaces Burris as the oldest guy in the league. So Hank's probably pretty happy.
Yeah, it's like when old time wrestler comes out from the 80s or something, and they get that big pop.
Like Goldberg did a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Not from the 80s, but he's a good guy. Yeah. Okay, another bit of news: the Eskimos and the Toronto Argonauts. Their game this week will be a live mic game. I think we know why this is happening. These were the two teams that hadn't done it. The Argos just weren't scheduled for one, and as we know, the Eskimos disobeyed the CFL when they kind of tore their mics off and refused to wear them in their game against the Owls a few weeks ago. Again, I think a lot was made of this when it happened. Those fines and everything, I think, were warranted. I think we'll see the Eskimos wear them. Mike Riley might not, because he doesn't have to if he chooses not to. But I think we're going to see Jason Moss wear one. I think we're going to hear some insight. But I think at the end of the day, all that paranoia the Eskimos had about giving away too much, I think, is just silly. I don't think we're going to learn much. But these games tend to do pretty good ratings. So they promote this as a live mic game. More people will tune in. So that should be interesting.
Yeah. They will, or Moss will wear the mic. I mean, he's not going to risk getting suspended in a playoff game. So, yeah, I mean, if they can draw more ratings, then more power to them.
And a last bit of news, not really news. It's something I wanted to talk to you about. The Calgary Stampeders lost this past week to the Montreal Alouettes, and they started Drew Tate instead of Bo Levi Mitchell. What do you think? Do you think the Stamps, if they would have won this game, they would have set the record for the best single-season, regular-season record in CFL history at 16-1-1. Instead, they go 15-2-1. And they bookend their seasons. Their first game of the season was lost. Their last game of the regular season was lost. Kind of interesting how that happens. What do you think? If it was you, would you have gone for the record?
Listen, I think it was the right decision to put in Drew Tate. This guy's been a starter in the league before. He has a lot of talent. They still had a lot of weapons around him. So I don't think it was a mistake. I think they were still going for the record. They just, I would be worried about a Montreal defense that has Kyrie Saint-Bert and Venable and Chip Cox out there that old Levi Mitchell would get injured. So I think it was the right decision. Now, this leads into my bozo. It goes to Drew Tate because, you know, you have such a good team around you and you can't put up more than 8 points. You can't guide this team to a win over the Montreal Alouettes, who have just been atrocious this year. He gets my bozo because he knew it was on the line. And yes, the Calgary Stampeders are all about winning the Grey Cup this year. They'll say that it doesn't matter, but I think it does matter to the players on that team. And, you know, the quarterback is one player on the team. He's not the whole team, but I think that Drew Tate let down his teammates and the Calgary fans.
You know, I think I agree with you on sitting Mitchell against that Montreal defense, because we've seen Kyrie Saint-Bert and Winston Venable and Chip Cox and Bear Woods take some pretty dirty shots at people this season and in seasons past. So I could kind of understand the reasoning for sitting Mitchell and playing Tate. But like you said, Tate's supposedly a good quarterback. He's been a backup in this league for a long time. He was the reason, not Mitchell, Tate was the reason that Henry Burris was shipped out of Calgary. They thought Tate was the future there. So you'd think that with all the talent around him that that he could have got the job done. But maybe this just helps solidify Bo Levi Mitchell. He's going to win MOP anyway, but maybe this just solidifies how good he actually is, because they put a guy in there who is, for all intents and purposes, a decent player, and they scored, 8 points? Like, that's not the Calgary offense we're used to seeing. They just weren't clicking. It's not like Tate got the first-string practice. Like, he was starting. He got the reps all week in practice, so it's not like they were just they gave it all to Mitchell, and then at the last second said, oh, Tate's going to start. They knew what they were doing going in. I think it was a mistake for them. Maybe not a mistake to not go over the record, like you said, they probably still were trying to win. But we award a Grey Cup champion every year, and I know that if the Stamps went 16-1-1 and lost in the West Final or lost in the Grey Cup, people would say, oh, well, it doesn't matter that they set the record for wins in the season because they didn't win the championship. I don't like that. because there's something to be said about setting a record in a regular season when you're playing everybody, when you're grinding week after week. There's something to be said for having the best record in a regular season. I don't think losing the NBA championship lessened what the Golden State Warriors did last year in winning 73 games. That's an accomplishment. I don't think losing the Super Bowl lessened the Patriots winning, going 16-0 in the regular season in 2007. And I see that as someone who hates the New England Patriots, like hates them. I don't think that who was it? The Detroit Red Wings, I think, won like 62 games in a season. I think they set the record for most wins in a season and didn't win the Stanley Cup. I don't think there's something to be said for winning a bunch of games in the regular season when it's a grind. It's tough. It's not easy to win football games. And I think if the Stamps would have gone 16-1-1, I know people talk about the Edmonton Eskimos and say, well, in 89, they went 16-2 and they did not win the Grey Cup. But we still talk about how they went 16-2 when it was brought up. It wasn't brought up that, this is the best team that won the Grey Cup. It's the best record. I think we in North America, because they do it in soccer, where they have their tournaments, and I think we've talked about this before, not that long ago. They have their tournaments, but winning the league, when you play every team a certain number of times, matters. That's the one you want to win. I think we give not enough credit to teams who are great during the regular season, because we've seen 8-10 teams win Grey Cups. We've seen 9-19 win Grey Cups. Hell, if the Ticats lose this week against Montreal and somehow miraculously go on a run to win the Grey Cup, they'll have won 7 games in the regular season, but they got hot in the playoffs. And I understand that counts too, but there's something to be said for winning when you're playing everyone and it's the weekly grind. I think we need to give more respect to teams that perform well in the regular season and not diminish their accomplishments if they just so happen to have a bad day when it happens to be a playoff game.
Yeah, very playoff-centric in North America. I don't know too much about the soccer, how they do it. I get confused with all the different leagues and all that crap.
that's fair. It can be confusing.
Yeah, for sure.
Like I said, I just think the Washington Capitals are a perfect example of that in hockey. They year in, year out, they're one of the best teams in the NHL, but then everyone says, well, they never won the Stanley Cup, so it doesn't matter. But I don't know. I don't like that mentality that we have here. I think it matters to win all those games in the regular season. It does.
Yeah. I mean, you'd be in the record book forever. So I just think that, you know what? I didn't even see the game. I was working, but to put up 8 points, I mean, with all that talent around you, I gotta throw the bozo at Drew Tate.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. I think that's well-deserved. And we know Montreal is a good defense, and this segues nicely into what we're going to talk about next, which is the Ticats' regular season finale this Saturday at Tim Hortons Field against those very same Montreal Alouettes that knocked off the Stampeders. This is the last game of the regular season, Mike. I can't believe it's already here, but it is. And this game is pretty much meaningless. Like we said earlier, the Ticats are locked into second in the East and will play whatever team from the West crosses over, Winnipeg or Edmonton. We'll find out later in the week. So I think this might be the very first time that we have ever sat down to preview a game in the regular season that has absolutely no meaning whatsoever, no bearing on the standings, no nothing. I think the Ticats this year and last year when we were doing this, the games mattered all the way through the season. So this is different. This game essentially is a glorified preseason game, in my opinion. It's tough to kind of break down the offense and the defense because we don't know what this team's going to do. I think the one thing I want out of this game more than anything else is for the team to leave the game healthy. Like, we have been decimated by injuries all across the roster, and I just want to see this team get out of this game with no one out for the year or out for the next game or whatever it is. So again, it's tough to kind of preview this game because, like I said, it doesn't really matter. But I want to see, in general, I want to see this team perform better than they did against Edmonton than they have in the last 2 months. I want to see them be better than they have been most of the season. Montreal, let's face it, is not a good football team. Neither is Hamilton, really. But I want to see this team go into the playoffs on a winning note. I really do. I think a win on Saturday would at least give me a glimmer of hope that semifinal Sunday will not be the last game of 2016 for the Hamilton Ticats. It might be faint hope. It might be false hope, but it will give me hope that this team can at least figure something out. But I'm kind of curious as to how they're going to play this game. You know what I mean? Like, is everyone going to start? We haven't seen Ken Austin really pull guys. There's been blowout wins that this team has had that Caleros has played from start to finish. There's been blowout losses where they don't really pull players. It'll be interesting to see what his philosophy is going into this game. How do you think they should play this game? Should they rest guys? Should they play to win? What would you do if you were in charge of the Ticats this week, Mike?
Well, I would rest certain guys. I would rest Caleros. I don't want to risk him getting hurt, even though he hasn't been playing Caleros-like this season for most of the season. I'd sit him. I put Mazzoli in there. You know, you just can't risk it. Caleros is the guy. We've been saying it all season. Keep him healthy. But other than that, maybe sit CJ Gable because we know that he can get injured at any point. But yeah, you know, play to win, but sit certain guys that you need in this playoff run.
Yeah, and thinking about it, I think I might maybe play some of the start, like play everyone, but play them very limited minutes. Maybe play Caleros a quarter, Gable a quarter, just to see them kind of get. This team has not had a rhythm all season, and I think they need to find a way to get into rhythm. And I think we're not going to see this team change its identity in one game. I would just like to see them have a little bit of success and then maybe pull the reins back a little bit, because the outcome of this doesn't matter. If they finish 8-10 or 7-11, I don't really give a darn, because it's not going to matter. They are where they are. This team is what they are. But I would like to see a little bit of rhythm develop on the offensive side of the ball. And look, the rosters are limited, so it's very difficult to not play players. You're not going to see offensive linemen sit. You're probably not going to see defensive linemen sit. But yeah, I think the two names you mentioned, Caleros and Gable, if I was to pull guys or sit guys and not play them, those would be the two guys. I think we know what we're getting from them, and those are, I think, the two players that, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think Gable maybe even more than Caleros are two guys you cannot lose going into a playoff game where they have to win three to win a championship. And as good as Mazzoli has been, I don't think he can guide this team to a Grey Cup. I think Caleros still can. But I think if Gable was to be injured in this game, I think the running game takes a huge nosedive. And I don't think we can risk losing either player, but I really don't think we risk losing Gable. So if there is one guy that I have to sit on the entire team, I'm with you at CJ Gable.
Yeah, if Gable goes down, then the guy that comes in isn't going to be the great blocker, great pass blocker that CJ Gable is. So if he goes down, then it directly affects Caleros as well. So, yeah, just keep him healthy.
Yeah, and like I said, keep everyone healthy. That's all I want to see. I don't want us to talk about next week, all right, at the top of the show, we got to talk about injuries again. Just everyone, stay healthy, and let's roll into the playoffs, and who knows? We've seen, like I said, 8-8 teams, 9-9 teams win championships. So who knows what can happen? Once the playoffs start, anything is possible, and yeah, fingers crossed that we get out of this game healthy and get into the playoffs on a winning note.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, anything's possible, especially in football with a one-game playoff. So, you know, get the guys as healthy as possible. I doubt this is going to happen, but I've got my fingers crossed that Tasker might be back for the semifinal.
Yeah, well, I'll cross my fingers as well, because that would be a big boon if they got him back for the playoff run, for sure. You ready to do some CFL picks for the, I guess, the final time? I don't know if we're going to do them in the play. Well, I guess we're going to do them in the playoffs, but this is the final time for our pick'em pool, I believe. And, yeah, you ready to go?
Yep.
All right, so just give a little standings update here after the penultimate week of the CFL season. A little change at the top of the leaderboard. We still have Cappy D sitting in first with 10,348 points. But Andrew has overtaken myself as the man in second. He has 8,634 points. I slide down to third spot with 8,428 points. Mike, you moved up just one notch, though. You went from 16th to 15th, and now you sit with 5,333 points. So the first game of the weekend takes place Friday night in our nation's capital, with the Ottawa Redblacks hosting the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. This is the rematch of last week's game where Ottawa went into Winnipeg and got the win. Mike, who do you like in this one?
I think that Winnipeg really underperformed last week. Nichols didn't look great. I think they bounce back and get the win.
I'm with you. I think it's tough to beat a team twice in a row. We've seen that this year numerous times, with the exception of Calgary. I don't know if any team has won back-to-back contests against the same squad. I'm sure if I'm wrong, someone will correct me. But yeah, I think it's going to be especially tough for the Red Blacks to win this one. Again, they've locked everything up. I read that they're not – Henry Burris is going to play, but guys who are kind of nicked and bruised are going to sit. So they know that they have nothing to play for. Winnipeg still, if they win this game, has a shot at second in the West and can avoid going to the crossover. So Winnipeg – in a game where two teams are playing and one team has a lot to play for and another team has nothing to play for, I'm going to side with the team that has something to play for. I, too, am taking the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Now, on Saturday, we have a triple header. First up, we have the Ticats hosting the Alouettes. Mike, who do you like in that one?
I'm looking at the records right now, and Montreal's only one game behind Hamilton for wins. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. But I'm going to take the Ticats. I just hope they win. I'll take them for the hell of it.
I haven't seen anything out of Montreal. I know they beat Calgary, but I don't think the Stamps were up enough for that game. This is a meaningless game. So in a meaningless game, I'm going to take the home team. I'm going to take the Ticats in this one as well. And, of course, they're my team, so it's a bit of a homer pick. But, yeah, it's kind of surprising. We're down on the Isles and how terrible they are, and they do sit one game back of the Ticats. And that's a pretty big indictment of the Ticats, to be honest with you, more so than it is an indictment of the Alouettes.
Yeah.
Second game of the triple header sees the Argos head to Edmonton to take on the Eskimos. I'm assuming you'll be at that game, sir?
Yep.
Okay, so who do you like in this one, and why is it Edmonton?
Yeah, exactly. Take it, Edmonton. It's just Toronto's in shambles. They're not a good football team. Maybe Ricky Ray plays. Maybe, I don't know, the status of Drew Willey, but I got to go with the Eskimos. I think they're on a, they're on a bit of a roll lately. I think they're a better team than what their record shows, even though they're 9-8 right now. So I think they finish the season at 10-8. They put a beat down on the Argos, and they still have a faint chance of grabbing third in the West.
Yeah, the Eskimos are a dangerous, dangerous football team. It seems that they found their footing at the end of the year, and that's when you want to be playing your best ball. Mm-hmm. I too think that they will beat the Argos. The Argos are, how did we think this team was going to be a Grey Cup contender and a Grey Cup champion at the beginning of the year? I don't remember, but holy hell, have they looked horrible pretty much since the week after Labor Day. Since then, it's been all downhill. They were, I think, 4-2 at one point. They're what now, 5-12?
Yeah. Like, well,
wow.
At the start of the season, they made some improvements on the offensive line. They still have really good Canadian talent. I thought that Ricky Ray with time back there would light up the league. And they had a talented bunch of receivers, and their defense wasn't bad too. So, at the start of the season, they looked good, but we've seen how it played out, and they're just terrible.
Yeah, all those receivers are now playing for three other teams that will all make the playoffs while the Argos sit at home. Yeah, I guess I'm going Eskimos in this. I don't think there's any way they lose this game. It'll be interesting if Winnipeg does lose to Ottawa. Or if Winnipeg beats Ottawa, how the Eskimos will play this, because if Winnipeg wins, then Edmonton is locked into that fourth spot. So I'll be curious to see how the Eskimos play this if they know that they're going somewhere else. But I think that they'll want to, just like the Ticats will, they'll want to go into the playoffs on a winning note. You don't ever really want to lose that last game before you hit the playoffs. I think it doesn't do much for your psyche. And I think the Eskimos, like I said, they've put it on recently, and I think they could be a very dangerous team come playoff time, whether they reside in the East or the West. I think they're a team that could upset a couple of squads and maybe make a run here. We'll have to wait and see. Final game of the week and of the regular season takes place Saturday night in BC. The Saskatchewan Roughriders will take on the BC Lions. Mike, your pick.
I picked BC last week against Saskatchewan. I'm going to pick BC again. And yes, it's tough to teams back-to-back, but I thought that if Saskatchewan was going to steal a game in this two-game series, it would have been last week, last game at Mosaic, all that stuff, and they didn't. So, I think BC is just way too good to lose to Saskatchewan.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think the Lions put a beating on the Riders and end their season and send them into to the playoffs with a victory and locking up that second seed in the West. And That team, BC, if Jonathan Jennings is on, they are a very scary team come playoff time as well. And I would not be surprised if come the end of the year we're watching them in the Grey Cup game and not the powerful Calgary Stampeders, because Wally Buono come playoff time, he's the greatest coach in CFL history for a reason, and he's got the Grey Cup rings to show it. I'd be very scared if I was a team in the West of potentially playing the BC Lions come playoff time. So, yeah, I'm taking the Lions in this one as well.
Yeah, I think that if Jennings is on his game, they can beat Calgary. They can beat them. Their overall talent is there on par, I think. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they do in the playoffs.
Yeah, and I don't think we've talked enough about how great Manny Arsenault has been. Do you remember last season when at the beginning of the season, he was just absolute garbage. Yeah. And then Jonathan Jennings gets inserted in there, and he has been arguably the best receiver in the CFL since then. He has been awesome. My dad plays TSN Fantasy, and I help him out. And every week we take Manny Arsenault because the guy is like 100 yards and touchdown almost guaranteed. He has been awesome and so fun to watch. And a little part of me, because I personally ripped him last year, would kind of like to see him perform well, especially come playoff time. I don't think I'd be upset if the BC Lions made a run and won the championship, because there's a lot of guys in that team that you like. Solomon Alamimian, John Jennings is a great player. Arsenault, Burnham, Sinkfield. There's a lot of that's a team that I think you could really get behind if you're not playing them in the playoffs, so to speak. Yeah. But Manny Arsenault's just been awesome this year.
Yeah, and Burnt Ham has been amazing as well, too.
Burnt Ham, love it. That's it, Mike. We are done. Before we go, once again, like we've been doing the last couple weeks, I just want to remind everyone out there about the CFL Fans Fight Cancer event in Toronto during Grey Cup week. There was a little kerfuffle this week because at the time that this event is taking place, the Tie Cats are going to be hosting an event at the same venue, but apparently that was worked out. They're going to the Tie Cats are going to help with this, and they're hopefully a bigger crowd, so that's pretty cool. It will take place Saturday, November 26th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Shoeless Joe's, which you can find at 276 King Street West in Toronto. All the proceeds from the event will benefit the Wellsprings downtown Toronto facility. So, like I say every week, if you're going to be in the Big Smoke for the Grey Cup, why don't you head down to Shoeless Joe's on the 26th and help raise some funds for a great cause. So that's it, Mike. We are out of here. We are done for the week. Subscribe to the podcast if you're a listener on iTunes, or listen to it or download it at 3downnation.com. We had no questions this week because, once again, I forgot to ask. But when we do get back to getting people to ask us questions, they can always do so on Twitter. Mike, your Twitter handle, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And I am JoshSmith_82. And you can always post those questions in the comments section at any time. You don't need me or Mike to throw out a tweet asking for questions. Throw those questions at any time in the comments section on 3downnation.com. We will get to them there. So that was episode 63, the big 6-3. We're 2 years away from retirement, Mike. Maybe we'll retire after episode 65. No, yeah. We won't. We'll keep going. We're going to do this for as long as I have a voice and I'm not some sentient robot head or whatever. And even then, I probably will still do the show. But
that's if you keep watching.
Well, hey, I will still watch the Tie Cats, so I can still talk Tie Cats football. You can be our league correspondent, and I'll give you more to do. I'll offload all the work onto you.
That works.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. Anyway, that was episode 63 of Podski Weeby. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.